This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Decade Project. This is a podcast on One Heenit Productions, Patreon firstly, and then eventually on our main feeds, that looks back 10 years in the rear view to what films are still hanging around pop cultural significance wise, or just still continuing to resonate and influence. And we're in 2015. This is the very first episode of The Decade Project for 2025. We're in 2015. And I wouldn't have it any other way to have my favorite Bostonian film critic, one legendary Sean Burns, here to talk to me about a movie that I drastically underappreciated. I wanted to say drastically underappreciated. It's only gotten so much better every single time I've watched it in the preceding years, which is probably about three or four times since it came out. It is Bridge of Spies, directed by Steven Spielberg, co-written by Matt Charman and a couple of guys, Joel and Ethan Coen, starring Tom Hanks, a kind of jaw-dropping introductory performance to most of the people in the world from Mark Rylance. Sean, why was this your pick? Firstly, how are you, my man? But secondly, we started nattering on as we do before we recorded, so I wanted to catch some of that nattering on for this. But how are you? And why was this one that you were keen to talk about again?
Oh, I'm great as always. And it's the funny thing with this movie is, can a movie win Oscars and make money and still be underrated? Because it feels like whenever you mention this movie to people, like, oh, it's so underrated.
I think things escape. Like, it's that weird thing that Spielberg like, there's certain people where it's like, they can still be nominated for awards and Oscars and sometimes win, but they kind of feel like that if we don't give this movie at least one award, people are going to be mad at us, but we're going to give it a tactical best supporting actor. We're going to flagrantly ignore everything else because that'll just shut everyone up. It's Spielberg, so we're going to give him something, and then it just floats away, you know?
I remember at the time there was like on film Twitter, people were treating it like homework. They're like, oh, it's another World War II movie with Spielberg and Tom Hanks. And I'm like, oh shit, not that.
Oh no.
not even World War II, but that's, you know, another historical film.
Another historical, yeah. Oh, that sounds so boring. The last one was not like one of the best movies any of us had ever seen or anything. It's fine.
And you know, it just happens to be written by the Coen brothers, two of the greatest living filmmakers. Why would we be excited about this? I'm sure. I don't know. It was strange. Because it's, you know, it has this reputation as being starchy because it's a very idealistic movie. And I'll tell you, man, watching this, I know it's only been 10 years, but I threw it on last night. It wasn't just another decade. I mean, it was another life where I'm hearing Hanks go on about the importance of the rule book and that what America stands for is that we are all equal in the eyes of the law. And it's such this compressed, if you look at like this in Lincoln, there's his Obama movies.
Yes. Yes.
And there's this sort of hope and a faith in institutions that the years have not been kind to this, my friend.
No. But I think also he even had those hints in this movie. It's like, you've got this really idealistic person who really truly believes in the promise and prospect of the American dream. And then there's just so many people like, oh no, like we don't associate ourselves with you and we're not going to protect you while we send you to East Germany. and we don't care if you don't have a coat and you're going to stay in this shit house. Like, I don't even know what it is. Like an apartment that looks like it's inside it looks like it's inside the facility in The Thing, in John Carpenter's The Thing from 82. Like that's how cold it looks and feels. But yeah, we're going to stay.
Well, it's
in
strange because the script is like it's bifurcated, like it's almost in half, where
yeah.
The first half is this Spielberg one man against the system, and it ends with him basically ends with him testifying in the Supreme Court about the importance of everyone being equal and before the law. And then the second half is this Kafka-esque total Coen Brothers
Oh my
movie
God, it is beautiful.
about where it's just this goofy, like, it's almost like a Fritz Lang movie too, the way it's shot. And Hanks is this straight man to these increasingly goofy and insane characters. I mean, Rylance's fake family is one of the
Oh
funniest
my
things.
God, it's brilliant. I love and the I can't remember the exact line, but it's like when he meets someone who he thinks is some inconsequential embassy hand, and then he gets back to his CIA liaison officer and he's like, oh, I met this guy, and he's like, that's the head of the KGB in Eastern Europe. You didn't meet that guy. He's like, yeah, I met that guy. He's like, no, he didn't. And he's such a buffoon. Like he does this beautiful, it's like this almost like Tinker Tailor level of buffoonery that comes back around to malevolence. Like he's like, yeah, of course they stole your coat. But it's from Saks in New York.
Saks Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, how do you know? It's like that happened 15 minutes ago. It's just these beautiful touches where they can take, it's just perfect Coen, where you take something that's so patently ridiculous and then you turn it into something that's really malevolent and dark, like in like one line. And I love that Spielberg like embraces the ride of all that, and there's nothing better than Tom Hanks arguing. I want to get the actor's name. I love he was the he played the He played like the German Democratic Republic, like lawyer who was facilitating
Oh,
the
Vogel,
swap.
yeah.
Yeah, Vogel. Oh man, he was that. Watching those two, like him trying to puff himself up and be self-important, and watching those two go at each other and go, "Yeah, well, you just tell the Russians that you messed this up." It's just so good. It's very Coen,
This is my
very Coen.
favorite kind of Hanks, because it's like, he can do like the endearing goodness and this moral solidity, but he can also be really like sly and clever. And like, my favorite Hanks performances are like this, or like Captain Phillips or something, where he's also the smartest guy in the room.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like, he got won an Oscar for playing a moron,
Yes.
but Hanks is an incredibly savvy person. I mean, you don't have a career this long at his level without being that smart. And there's something very insinuating about the way he plays these guys. Like, if you notice in the movie, like when he needs the upper hand for a second, he'll just make them get him a drink.
Yeah,
It's like strategically maneuvering around the.
that's a I hadn't noticed that. That is good. But it's also there's that funny symmetry in the movie, as you said, with these two halves. But the judge in this movie, in the American court case, is like a staple of Coen Brothers movies. I want to get his
Oh
name.
yeah, he's the horse guy from True
He,
Grit.
oh that's I hear he is. Dakin Matthews plays Judge Byers. That horse scene in True Grit is one of my favorite scenes in any movie that has ever existed. That's a movie we're going to have to get to, I think, on this show, Decade Project, because True Grit is one where everyone, anytime Matt Damon comes in a conversation, I don't mention Bourne, I don't mention Good Will Hunting. I'm like, have you seen him in True Grit where he's just a cowardly freaking loser? It's the greatest performance
Well,
he's ever
that's
given
another
in his
one I'm
life.
talking about, where that movie made like $150 million and it got 13 Oscar nominations, and it still feels underrated.
Oh,
It's like,
completely. Well, that's because the Coen brothers at that time were on that heater. They were on that
yeah.
absolute. They're on that absolute heater, you know. But yeah, no. He Dakin Matthews is his beautiful scene where he goes to the judge, and he has this. You know, they go, this isn't entirely legal, like the whole exercise. And he goes and convinces him, but the judge's wife uses that trick. She uses the, "Can I fix you a drink?" And then the
You're
judge
right.
hands him a drink when he wants to think. And it's this great, like, beautiful little symmetry thing. You go, oh, he's picked something up. I don't want to answer this right away. I want to take 2 minutes to get myself ready. But yeah,
Yeah, it
it's
does have that great Coen construction too, where it's like your guy or my guy. These things, like these dialogue patterns, just keep coming back when they're talking. You know, it's not one incident, it was five accidents. No, it was one accident that hurt five people.
And then the one is like, no, it's not. This isn't a 2-for-1 deal. No, it's a 1-for-1-for-1 deal. We all benefit. Like, it's like these great, like, little, it's everyone's happy. What are we doing?
Well, and it's strange too, because Spielberg does not usually work. It's not strange to say for someone who's made so many great movies, but he doesn't work with a lot of great writers. I mean,
No,
he's
I mean,
usually
like
working with,
Kep.
like,
Like, but
yeah, it's like
like
David Kep,
Kep.
like these purely functional, like they can get a set piece and, you know, but there's not, when you think of the great dialogue scenes, it's wait, you got to go back to Jaws or something. Or, you know, I mean, Lincoln was such a big exception because it was really him flexing that muscle you don't normally see.
Lincoln feels like a Coen Brothers movie, especially when you see those, when you see it's like James Spader. I can't remember all the guys. There's like the guys who are drumming up votes. They are a Coen Brothers movie. That, like, they're in the
It's
middle.
also, it's really Altman-y too,
Yeah.
that it's
Yes.
like this
All
super irreverent, like
yeah. Yes.
crosstalk and
Yeah. That's very fun. But yeah, no, I'm trying to think of, like, just straight up amazing writers he's worked with. All right, let's have a look.
I mean, there was like Munich, right? I mean, there
I mean,
is.
Munich. That's another one that I'm just
That's a
like.
great screenplay. But for the most part, you don't come out of Spielberg movies talking about how great the script was. It's
No.
just, he's a set piece guy. And
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny because, yeah, Munich, War of the Worlds is again a Kep. That's. I'm trying to look at Minority Report was a great script, but that was, oh, that's Scott Frank. So yeah, that was a banger. Scott Frank, a terrific screenwriter. But yeah, it's really interesting. He doesn't do that. But one of the things I liked about this sort of, and I love about recent era Spielberg just in general, is he seems to embrace just working with really cool, like really amazing other filmmakers and sort of having a bit of fun. Like, I can't imagine the Coen brothers would have had a ball working with him. I would imagine just being able to go, like, all the pressure's off us. We're going to give you this rip snorting script, but one of the best who's ever done it is going to be here just playing, and we can just be there and have fun watching Spielberg do his thing. Like, I imagine they would have had a fucking ball doing this movie. But yeah, no, he's and oh, let's have a look at what he's got coming up. What are the next couple?
Oh, well, I mean, that changes every day, you know, and then he ends up shooting something that was never even announced, sort of.
Luke, you love this. It's like upcoming untitled Steven Spielberg's event film Amblin Universal is its current working title on IMDb, which great. You may as well apply that name to 17 of his other movies that have made like billions of dollars. Cool. And
I
he's
know it's
like,
heresy in some quarters, but I think this is like his last great movie that I've seen. I feel like the past 10 years has not been a productive time for old Stevie.
did
I
you
mean, The
like
Post
Interstellar?
was fun, but it was a little slight.
I can't. I really like so many of the creatives that are involved in the post, like top to bottom, behind the scenes too, even some of their writing work and all that sort of stuff, from the script to all of the actors. But I'm such an All the President's Men acolyte that I can't. The movie just feels, it feels like it came at that time, 2017, is that, like, we can't let this guy have the money that he needs to make a really tactile 1970s feeling movie. It's still the look of the movie, I just don't think fits. But yeah, I think, I mean, West
And
Side
it's more of a,
Story.
like a newspaper comedy too. He wasn't really
Yes.
trying to do a.
He wasn't doing
That's sort of what I
presidents.
like best about it. But I mean, but after that, like I didn't, I mean, BFG's what it is. And I mean, I hated Ready Player One. I didn't like The Fabelmans at all. Like,
I didn't mind that. I wasn't as strong on the Fablemans as many people, but West Side Story, perhaps because of the year that it came out, was still so staggeringly good compared to maybe just the crop of movies in 2021. I personally feel it was
Yeah,
so
that was another one. It's well staged, but why does it exist? I
yeah.
can't. There's no,
What is
it's a
this?
museum piece, you know? And it's like, and the weird changes to the original just bothered me. Like,
Yeah. But I'm still such a fan. Like I'll always go to bat for Munich in
yeah, well,
2000.
Munich's.
A fucking masterpiece.
That was 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Like,
It's a long time ago. Yeah. 20 years ago. What a resume. Jesus Christ. Like, get a grip on you. Like, when you can have in, I mean, this is just even from 98, Saving Private Ryan, AI, Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, The Terminal, War of the Worlds, Munich. Munich and War of the Worlds came out in the same year. That's
yeah.
stupid.
Minority Report and Catch Me If You Can were
Yeah,
within like
the
6 months of each other.
yeah.
It's
It's just kidding. Stop. Stop.
ridiculous.
But no, I have so much time for this movie particularly, because when I was watching it, I was like, you're so right. There is those that more homeworky, idealistic vibe. And I think at different times people, particularly of our generation, are a little bit more cynical about everything. So like when we see some of these things, you kind of immediately have this kind of like, ugh, roll your eyes cynicism moment. But I think the balance, on balance, the movie completely works. It's so funny to watch him be deflated, that cynicism be completely deflated and undercut, and he has to do all this backhanded nonsense to get him through this situation, which is so great. We
No, and
haven't.
it is this great, the ideal. It's such the, like, I mean, it's such a Hanks, Spielberg, Obama, Springsteen sort of Americana. And it's like, it feels like such an endangered species. It was just weird watching in light of everything that's happened
Yeah,
lately.
especially because we were talking about symmetry before. There's a great symmetry of a shot in the movie where he's crossing the border between East and West Germany, and you're seeing people try and escape through this line and getting gunned down. And then in New Jersey, later on in the film, as he's heading from his home. Or like through Brooklyn, there's a part where he's traveling through the city and there's elevated rail and he's going through and he's seeing kids climb a fence and play, and it's this kind of visual symmetry that's like, oh, isn't it nice that we have this like peacetime that people don't get shot? And it's almost like, how many more years before someone crosses a state in America and gets
Yeah.
shot? Like, is this on the horizon? I don't know. This
Well, I
is.
remember being so proud of Spielberg during that shot too, because it's at the end of the movie, and endings are notoriously a treacherous time when you're watching a Spielberg movie. For me, every one of them, it's like when the plane's landing, where you're like, okay, just don't fuck it up. It's been so good for so long. And then this, it was like, please don't cut back to the scene from before. Please don't
No,
cut back.
don't cut back. Don't come back.
And I feel like 20 years ago he would have, and now he was confident enough to like, no, I can just show you the thing without. But I will tell you what really stuck out to me watching it again. Man, the difference between John Williams and Thomas Newman, like it's not even fair. This score stinks. Like, I'm not a big Thomas Newman guy to begin with, but
Thomas Newman is not one of my faves either, to be fair. I actually do want to try and be fair. I'm gonna try and go to Newman's like resume. What the hell was John Williams doing? Is the question. Was he stuck on Star Wars?
I think he was doing a Star Wars, right?
Okay.
Which makes it even worse, like doing like Force Awakens or something. Like,
Yeah, Jesus.
or maybe he was sick. I don't remember. There was, but it was a big deal because it was the first Spielberg movie without Williams, and it was just like I had forgotten that. And then I was watching the movie again. I was like, "Oof, that is not John Williams." Like, I mean, they lay it on so when Rylance tells the story about the standing man, and all of a sudden this like audio syrup starts like oozing out of my speakers in my room. I'm like, wait a minute, what is this?
And anyone reaching to do Williams is always the worst thing possible. And it's like, oh, I'm gonna do him. I'm gonna do the inclination. I'm gonna have that. Yeah, I'm having a look at this. Oh God. All right. Well, he did Elemental, which the Pixar movie, which is quite cute. I actually didn't mind the score on that one. That's a and I have heard it many times because I've had to listen to it. And he's done some Pixar stuff with like Finding Dory. That's good.
Yeah, I don't see
Spectre.
these. I don't have children. I don't watch these things.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Trying to look. I mean, he did a couple of them. He did Skyfall. That's probably another really good one that came out of that time. But I don't think you can screw up a Bond movie. It's got all of the John Barry DNA that you
Yeah,
can't
just rip
screw it
off
up.
John Barry
Yeah, rip
and.
off John Barry a bit and it's fine.
I just remember when I was reviewing Mank, I was talking about how disappointed I was in the Reznor Ross score for that, and said, apparently you're either going to die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become Thomas Newman.
I love that you got a little cheeky Dark Knight dig in there. That's brilliant. Actually, there is one score that I love of his, Road to Perdition. That's a
yeah.
fucking that's a score. That's a great for me. I adore that. I love that
I haven't
movie.
seen that movie since it came out. When I
Ah,
remember. My
it's
headline was Forgiven.
a
That was like, what if the assassin be, what if he was just a nice guy though? Yeah.
Yeah, it's Tom Hanks. It's a great. I love that movie. It's so good. But let's.
Love how he only kills people out of frame. Like it's just there's never any blood. Like when Jude Law shoots someone, there's brains and shit splattering all over the face. But when Hanks does it, it's very discreet. It's just
And Jude Law's like, I love dirtbag Jude Law too. He's like licking his lips and being disgusting and embracing
oh
his
yeah, it's like
weird receding hairline, just
I'm the
licking his
prettiest
teeth.
man in the world. Look at how gross I can be.
Yeah, he loves it. That's really good. But we've only like mentioned his name like two or three times. This Mark Rylance performance is stupidly good. And the opening stanza sequence with one of my big guys, Dominic Lombardozzi, Herc from Miami Vice, his most famous performance.
I know, this was that era when he was just in everything. If you
yeah.
had like
He's
some
us.
sort of thuggish functionary, it was going to be
It
Lombardozzi.
has to be Lombardozzi. Sorry, it's Herc from The Wire or from Miami Vice at
Zito,
the time. Yeah, Zito from Miami Vice. Everyone was like crazy about him, but that opening sequence of Rylance painting and going and finding the coin and they were coming into his apartment and then cleaning the little note that he gets with his paints and oh, just such a terrific. A terrific sequence of events. And then even the end of the movie, which is terrific as well. How do I know if you're going to be okay? Like Tom
Yeah.
Donovan says, and he says, if I'm embraced, I'm okay. If I'm shown the back of the car, I'm not. And then you just get these beautiful stoic S Spielberg shots of bridges and silhouettes. And, it feels like
Well,
it's,
he's so level the whole time, Rylance. Like,
yeah.
it's the perfect spy performance
Yeah.
where, he doesn't have any change in the voice, no intonations. So it was just like, I was wondering. Because he's become so insufferable in recent
Oh,
movies.
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I can't stand him anymore. When I see him in a movie, I'm like, oh no. I forgot. That was great to watch. Like, oh yeah, I did. I love this guy. He's
Yeah.
great. I don't know if it's his stupid hats or what, but
It's stupid.
that was in Bones and All when he kept coming back. Like you would think they'd killed him and he was gone from the movie, and then he kept popping out like every 35 minutes. It was like, oh, him again.
I'm trying to
But he's
see.
gotten so shticky in films. And
I
it
just
was
think
weird
that.
though, because I had seen him 20 years before in the early 2000s, and there's this movie called Intimacy. This British movie, and it was a big deal because the oh, it was Mr. Royal Shakespeare Company. I think it might have been his last movie before Bridge of Spies. And the actress Carrie Fox from An Angel at My Table gives him an unsimulated blowjob on screen. This was a
Okay.
huge deal. Her husband wrote like an article for The Guardian about it, like what it was like going to the set that day and watching his wife blow Mark Rylance. That was sort of just how I remembered this guy. It's like, hey, now he's back in movies, huh?
And we're going to give him an old Spielberg, clearly huge intimacy guy.
Look, it adds a whole different level to the BFG.
Oh, God. And he plays the weird guy in Ready Player One. I mean, that movie
He's
does
so bad in
stink.
that.
The movie does stink, but I was trying to, it was one day where I was trying to get the kids to watch something that I hadn't seen 45,000 times. And I'm like, oh, Ready Player One's like a video game. I didn't even watch a bit of this. And then I remembered the Shining scene. I'm like, oh shit, I can't, this is not right. I can't be, this can't be the first way that they experience the Shining. Let's turn this off. Let's watch something else. I have not
Should have just
seen,
shown them The Shining. They're old enough.
listen, what our parents did to us. Like when I'm, 8 years old or something watching Pulp Fiction, or 9 years old or something watching Pulp Fiction, I don't know if that was the right idea. I turned out okay.
We turned out fine.
We turned out fine, but also like, what's he doing to Marcellus Wallace down there?
You don't want to answer those questions,
No, I
huh? When I
don't
saw
want.
Deliverance, like,
I
what are they doing to
don't.
Otis, Dad? Nothing good.
Nothing good. Pleasure, Dad. Nothing good. Literally, this was okay. I remember there being. It's like a statute of limitations. I distinctly remember some kind of family function, a Howard family function, where we as all young kids were watching Pulp Fiction and it was getting up to that sequence. The whole family was watching. It was like all the adults just wanted to watch Pulp Fiction together. And then it was literally like this calculated thing of like, all right, kids, out of the room. And they took like all the kids who were basically like 10 and under had to leave, except me, because I'd already seen Pulp Fiction like four times. And I was like, and then after the sodomy scene, it was like, all right, kids, you can come back in.
Can come back for the samurai sword.
What? Oh, Jesus Christ. But yeah, so Rylance in this movie, yeah, as you said, it's these are my favorite spy performances are the ones that give you ab where people give you absolutely nothing. They just, they're just, I don't know. I say that, but also, I do love me a kind of Javier Bardem in Skyfall that's completely over the top. I just love those as well. I do love me an espionage movie, but I also love that era, that very 70s thing that sort of has been captured intermittently in the spy genre of like people who just give you absolutely nothing and say nothing and have that ability to leech information out of people. And watching that kind of like unstoppable force, immovable object of like Donovan's like positivity and lore and the rule book, and Rylance has this, even though it's extremely understated, has this beautiful curiosity and like, huh, like isn't he adorable? Like kind of like look at Donovan. Doesn't his idealism so adorable? It's so intoxicating. And he's kind of got a sweetness where he's like completely a pragmatic person about the experience of the world. And yet their interplay is just so delightful because he's just like, aren't you worried? Would it help? Just that beautiful.
Well, Hanks is so great at playing off
Yes.
another great actor. When you have him like volleying like that, it's so much fun to watch. Like him throwing things back and forth with, I mean, Hanks' reaction shots are great. He just knows how to do the eyes things and
That's why he was so fun in what was the recent Wes Anderson?
oh yeah, Asteroid City. Yeah,
Asteroid
he's
City. That's why I
tremendous
was
in
like,
that.
oh, he's just, you look at him and you're like, God, he should be in more Wes Andersons because he gets to be in scenes with like five other Academy Award winners and just like do the face. And you're like, I love it. That's
Yeah, and I
the.
mean, God, talk about a guy who's had kind of a rough run of things lately. I mean, he has not had a good time since Bridge of Spies. Like some of these movies have been brutal. I mean, leaving aside all the Zemeckis stuff.
I've still not seen Here, Sean. I haven't seen it yet. I missed it in my end of year rush to, for folks who are listening to this on the Decade Project, my end of year rush of like finishing Mindhunter, finishing, the last few episodes of our Sneakers series. Too many minutes were happening. Trying to wrap up the year, I was like, oh God. But yeah, there are a few ones that are I mean, he did Pinocchio, God. And Finch
There's
was.
a weird thing in here where he's trying to be like a teenager and he's doing like the young Tom Hanks, like with the arms and
Yes, yes.
when he's de-aged, it just looks like Woody, like a Woody doll
Yeah.
came to life. It's so creepy.
Yeah, because he's. I'm trying to
I mean,
look
I
at.
don't hate that movie as much as some people do, and I do not like it as much as other people do. It's just a it's a failed experiment as far as I'm concerned.
I mean,
I'm glad I saw it.
the last one I really love is Sully too. I like
Yeah,
Sully a
Sully's
lot.
tremendous.
Tremendous movie. And then
That's
also.
another, you talk about a reaction shot. There's one when they're landing the plane. It's one of those perfect moments where he just moves his eyebrows slightly in response to something Eckhart says. And I saw Sully like three times. Every time the audience just exploded because it was like the perfect pressure relief. It's this tense scene. And he does that, okay. And it was like this, he knows how little he has to do to have the
Yes.
audience with him. He was like, I'll
Yes.
just do the raise the eyebrows a little bit and say, okay, and I've got you. You're with me. I'm the pilot. And Sully's tremendous. It's so
And
good.
I'm so Sully peeled that like my algorithm even on Instagram goes to like Tom Hanks telling Clint Eastwood stories. Like it always just goes back to him going like, he gives like Eastwood treats you like a horse. He's just like, all right. Like he just starts doing his like his Eastwood impressions. It's so funny. It's like, oh, this is good. I wish he just could work with Eastwood one more time, just for
I
one more
was, why
PR
did it
round.
take them that long? Like,
Just seems
these
crazy.
guys are America, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, like it seems crazy. Another great movie from 2024 for me was Juror Number Two. Another like really terrific, solid, just
I mean, it was
entertaining.
solid. I think it's been kind of overrated because we don't get that kind of thing anymore. But
Yeah,
I mean,
but
it's a,
it's right in wheelhouse Blake.
yeah.
It's
I
like
mean it.
legal thriller, good actors, directed the living shit out of it by a master. I'm like, that's my kind of deal.
Well, and I mean, it's just, it was so nice because I saw Venom 3 the same day.
Jesus
And I mean, you
Christ.
want to talk about like the tyranny of low expectations, but like watching Jury Number 2 and to see a movie where like the scenes followed one another in a way that made sense. Like this scene is happening because the one that happened before it happened. That is completely gone from studio filmmaking. Like the screenplays now are just piles of notes and with arbitrary action beats thrown in and strange exposition things. I mean, I don't know if you saw Venom 3, but the movie starts three times.
No,
There...
I haven't been lucky enough to see it
I mean, I went just because I had 2 hours to kill and that voice makes me laugh.
It doesn't, and I in my head as soon as you started saying you're watching, I could just imagine your head going like Shawnee, Shawnee. Eddie.
But yeah, I counted three different scenes that like introduce characters and set up a story that goes into motion, and then they all contradicted each other. And it's like, I don't think anyone reads these things end to end. I don't think they watch them end to end. It's just we cram elements into a package. So with, and again, this is pulling it back to Bridge of Spies, but it's probably why. I mean, I know I underrated it the first time I saw it too, but now, I mean, this sort of this competence, the way it just flows like a story, it unfolds so nicely. Totally a lost art.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Yes. Yeah. And also the
And I know I
climate.
sound like the old man yelling at a cloud, but it's just, you know, it's tell a fucking story, man.
And also, people love stories that cohere. You know, I think that that's the other thing. There's recently a little bit of a spike. There always is when Quentin Tarantino's on another podcast that's not the Video Archives podcast, and he's like, yeah, like television is a serialized thing that always implies that there's more story to tell, and is like, but there's nothing like the experience. He was describing the experience of a great movie and how you remember things. He's like, and I find myself with so much television, it just like washes over me, and there's nothing that's memorable about it. I can't remember characters. I can't remember particular story beats. I might remember a performance, but it's so hard. It's like in a movie, like I'll think about it for 10 years. And there's just something about the economy of a really perfectly well-told story that ends without an implication of here's the cut scene at the end of the credits and introducing some new bozo character that no one cares about. But it just is told so just it finishes, it ends. It's a
Well, that's
very
what I want, a complete experience. Like,
yes.
that's what I don't want
Me
to, you
too.
know, this.
I
That's why I can't, I don't do this TV shows like everyone else does. I just can't get into it because and it's like Tarantino said, I just forget about what happened. Then it feels like homework
Yeah.
because all of a sudden you've got like 15 episodes that drop on a Friday and everyone's going to be talking about them for the weekend and then forget about it. It's over.
Yeah.
You don't know how to talk about it with anyone because they're all at different parts.
Yes.
What drives
It
me crazy, every time you go to a party now, if you talk to people, what they've seen, the most of the conversation is where do I find this and what channel is it?
Yeah.
Do I have that? I don't think I have this.
You just have to be a lunatic. No one's gonna ever see this, but I'm like, you have to be a lunatic like me, Sean. You have to have a physical media collection that has now taken over the entire room. It's
Oh my
just
God, I haven't seen that other wall there. That's
the other
impressive.
wall is, oh, hold on, let me straighten it up. That's where my TV is. And over there, that's just like imprint stuff. There is a Michael Mann shelf over there as well, that is just exclusive. And there's currently a John Frankenheimer stack over there. It's now in the many thousands. But yeah, nothing infuriates me more, like just in general about that. Like people don't know where to find stuff. There's an app in Australia. I think it might be in the States as well. I think it's integrated into Letterboxd, which is called Just Watch. And
Yeah.
so many times people are like, oh, I saw this movie. And I'm like, huh, I wonder if that's on any Australian streaming service. The movie you have searched is not available on streaming in your country. I'm like, cool. Awesome. Like they
Yeah.
solved
And
it,
with
clearly.
television, it's worse because it's like there's all these channels that I'm not going to subscribe to, and they pay hundreds of million dollars for these Apple shows. I don't think anybody watches them, right? I mean,
The Apple ones are a weird one because, like, for example, for years, speaking of an espionage movie, which we are, like, for years, like a couple of years, Slow Horses existed, and I just never even knew it existed anywhere. And it's an Apple TV, one of the big shows on Apple TV. And then I watched it and I'm like, this is an amazing show. And if that show was on Netflix, it would be everywhere. You know, like it would be, there'd be advertising, there'd be posters, you know, it'd be this gigantic show. And on Apple TV, it's just like, it's just there. And you're like, this is a great show. Like it's a great popcorn show. And it's in that British sense. This is maybe probably my Australian, coming out the most, but like a 6-episode series is about the tolerance level that I have at my age this now. Like a
yep.
six epi because 6 episodes, or you know, some British series, you know, Luther with Idris Elba, a couple of those series were six, and then there were fours. I'm like, 4 episodes. When I hear someone say, "Blake, you got to watch this show," and I go, "How many episodes is it, and what's the runtime?" And they're like, "Blake, it's 26 episodes, and they're all 50 minutes." I'm like, "I'm never. There is no
Yeah, it's
way in
not gonna
hell."
happen.
I'm like, that's at least 13 2-hour movies. I have a lot of, you know, someone's got to watch Gardens of Stone. You know, someone's got to watch The Cotton Club Encore. That's gonna be
And
me.
also, I mean, the way these things are paced, they're dragged out. I mean, I watched the first two episodes of that disclaimer.
Same here. That's about as far as I got. I watched two
And like
episodes.
three things happened. And I'm like, this is longer than Cuarón's best movies, and it hasn't started yet. Like, Children of Men began and ended in the time I've watched Kevin Kline deliver three fucking letters.
fucking Children of now, Children of Men is a movie that to this day is still underrated. People
Oh,
just
yeah.
completely miss that movie. And again, that's why I was in the bag for Disclaimer. I'm like, Cuarón, yeah, like he's one of my guys. I'm all in. But him making a TV show with great actors does not, it's that thing that doesn't excite me in any way, shape, or form. Like it just like Cuarón making a movie. All right, I'm in 100%. I'm all there. Like and entertain me. And even Gravity is like 88 minutes. It's 88
Yeah, well, like, did
minutes.
you know there was a show where Michael Douglas plays Benjamin Franklin? And I haven't watched it. Like, it was a movie. I probably have seen it six times by now.
It would be your whole personality. You'd have a poster on your wall. You'd be... Guys, you really fucking
It's
gotta see.
like Ben Franklin fucking his way through France, and it's Michael Douglas, and I just never crossed my mind. Oh, I have this, this TV roadblock.
Yeah, it's incredibly, yeah, it's an incredibly weird thing that the art of a story told. And also, how good is a movie that's so great that you just want to watch it again? Like I just don't, I don't, there with some TV shows, it's like I'm never watching that. I'm never going back to the beginning of that series, not watching a frame of it. It's
Yeah,
like
or
a
you watch individual episodes of the shows that had episodes. Like I watched certain Soprano episodes like 15 times, but those shows all had beginnings, middles, and ends while there was a larger arc going on during the season. It wasn't just a, like they say now, it's a 10-hour movie. It's like, well, there's a reason movies aren't 10 hours.
And also, speaking as a person who's gone to like film festivals and seen 7-hour movies, they're not fun. They suck. Especially the ones that don't have an intermission. You like look at your seat partner like next to you and like, I don't know, this better like this last hour has been a pretty big slog. I hope it gets some energy. It doesn't.
I'm like the world's biggest Satan Tango fan, so give me 7 hour bleak Hungarianism.
I mean, look, we can all handle Hungarians for 7 hours if we need to, but I'm just saying, like, it's not as frequent. I think there was a, I can't remember the filmmaker. I think it was an Arabian Nights adaptation. I'm trying to think who it was. It was a contemporary, was a contemporary telling of Arabian Nights. Maybe. I remember what year it was. Anyway, it was a. I think it was a South American filmmaker made it. Not it wasn't the Pasolini one. It's not that, but it was like this, something like that. One of those classical tales that had been adapted. That was one of the last ones that I saw. But yeah, and I hate binge. I also hate binge shows for that reason. When, like you said, when something drops on a Friday, and you start watching it, and it's like if that first episode doesn't get me, I'm not enduring to the seventh or eighth. You know, it just doesn't happen. You know, I might watch two and then I'm like, there's a
Yeah,
whole
whenever
lot.
until it gets really good around the eighth episode, I'm like, well, that's like a work day.
Exactly. That's a whole day that I could have been doing something else. And also, it's like, just go back and watch The Sopranos first episode and tell me you don't want to watch more of that. Or go back and watch the first episode of Deadwood and tell me you don't want to watch more of that. Or go watch The Wire. It's like, oh no, there are those shows you can just watch. They're amazing. You'll go back. It's like Deadwood, I've watched countless times. But you can start anywhere in any part of that series. And you know, there's gonna be Ian McShane's Al Swearengen calling people a cocksucker, people getting fed to pigs, people getting murdered, you know,
Yeah, well,
backstabbing.
each episode had its own beginning, middle, and end.
It had a master psychopath, David Milch, behind every episode, orchestrating every episode. You know, it feels like that, you know. It doesn't. You know, they're not always this stupid puzzle of interconnections. I want to shout out just a couple of other names that we haven't spoken about. This was peak Amy Ryan. Everyone trying to find a way for Amy Ryan to be in their movie. She's great, just very solid always. I
It's
can't
not much
remember.
of a part, but
It's a nothing part. Alan Alda's part is pretty thankless, but it's just so cool to look down this list and see how many great actors just like want to
I'd
stand.
forgotten Alan Alda was in it. And then when I watched it again, I heard that voice. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
He's in it. It's
I
so
love
good.
this guy.
Love him. And
Eve
Billy Magnus.
Hewson, right? She's the daughter.
Yes. And Billy Magnuson's in it, who's a bit of a weird guy, but really fun. Jesse Plemons pops up. Great. Like, see, that guy is. Jesse Plemons is going to just be sitting down on a porch one day, smoking a cigar, being like, I worked with everyone. It's just like, he's Paul Thomas Anderson, Spielberg, he's just going to just.
And, as a Friday Night Light, betraying my own, I don't watch TV, but I did when Friday Night Lights was.
Friday Night Lights.
I loved that show.
Great show.
And of all the people on that show, if you went back in time and told me, like, Landry's going to be in Scorsese.
Landry's going to be the biggest. He's going to be in Scorsese movies, Spielberg. You're like, really? He's the guy. He's the fucking man. I love Jesse Plemons.
He has that great hero shot in this too, when it's like, it's weird because it's not really like motivated. It's when he shows up, like, Murphy's here to identify him, and then Spielberg gives him this like swooping entrance where he walks in and he's got the hat tilted just right, and then Hanks is like, "Hello, Murphy," and it's like,
And
"Wow,
it's
he just looks like a movie star right there. That's strange."
and it's so funny because all those other guys, you couldn't pick those other pilots in the lineup. But Jesse
couldn't pick Gary
Plemons,
Powers out of a lineup.
But Jesse Plemons, you see him and you're like, oh, I know him. He's memorable. And maybe the audience is like, Landry, fuck yeah, Landry rules.
No, because nobody watched that show when it was on. It is, I guess it's like the Adam Driver lesson, right? Where if you just pick the weirdest looking guy on a TV show, he's going to be the one that
breaks
out.
He's going to be the one. What's the modern show that has that? There's too many shows. We don't know. But yeah,
it's all movie stars on him anyway. So it's,
yeah. I mean, I've just been for another, by the time people listen to this, they'll probably know about it. I've been doing some homework to guest on another podcast show. And I had to watch Jack, Francis Ford Coppola's Jack. And when I had completely blanked out of my mind that Robin Williams's primary school teacher was J-Lo, I was just like, people are this is broken. This is a broken movie.
I told you before, that was the first time I caught someone masturbating in a movie theater, right? Was Jack.
Yeah, cool. Where Bill Cosby.
The first of many, by the way, because I spent 15 years in movie theaters. But Jack was, you never forget your first. And that was during Jack. It was this young disabled boy who got carried away at the Fran Drescher scene.
Oh, God. Jack.
I've never finished watching the movie. I'd actually, like, I was supposed to be working, and it was the day Jack had opened, and I just kind of, like, ducked in and was watching it with my friend and I, and all of a sudden we're like, what's going on over there? Oh, no.
What's going on over there? Oh, no.
He was outside. He had left the theater. He was outside the cinema doors, rubbing himself on the floor.
Oh, no. John.
So we had no idea what to do. So we called the supervisor. It was like, we need a supervisor at Theater 13 stat and watched through the window as he ran over me.
Your poor supervisor was probably getting $8 an hour to deal with that situation.
He was so mad at us. Like, first of all, you're spending your shift sitting watching a shitty movie.
I don't blame it. I would have been just as mad that I had to come down.
Like, I couldn't open the door. I would have hit the kid.
Oh, God. You're looking at the window.
Yeah. I always thought someday I'd tell Coppola that story if I ever met him.
Next Bill Gaberry interview with Coppola, you just got to just sidle in there. We know Bill Gaberry; he's a good friend. Bill Gaberry, please, I have to come and tell this story. I want to hear what he says.
Yeah, when Tom Wilkinson died, it was funny. A guy I used to work with was immediately texted me. Remember when you caught that guy jerking off in Separate Lies? The movie nobody remembers. Tom Wilkinson and Emily Watson, but I remember it.
You can't forget it. How could you possibly forget it with those memories to help the trauma?
We come to this place for magic.
Oh, God.
God, well, we got way off.
So far off the reservation that it's perfect. Bridge of Spies is absolutely terrific. It's there is some huge Titanic Spielbergs in his later career. And I would love, whilst he still can work, I would love to see more of the people that we would consider our guys doing stuff together. Some of my favorite stories around this era of Spielberg, I know for like, it's obviously for a children's movie, but it's an adaptation that he was so, that was so important to him, was like The Adventures of Tintin. There were some amazing stories about the writing process of that movie, and Edgar Wright particularly was talking about it. And I'm trying to get the other guy's name. I've just lost it for a split second. Is where is it? The Adventures of Tintin. He's one of a one of the oh, it's like Stephen Moffat, and Edgar Wright, who, you know, both Brits working with adapting that stuff. And Edgar Wright was just talking about Spielberg as a filmmaker, the way that he collaborates with people and being so welcomed of, and you know, best idea wins and that sort of thing. And I just feel like if there's other great writers out there, I would love to see some of those big films get put in front of Spielberg and then get a chance to work together, because, you know, it seems like it's not just good enough to say it's a Steven Spielberg movie to get these things made, you know, these days. It feels like everything that's got such quality doesn't usually get the ability to have a theatrical release, have all this pomp and circumstance, have all these huge actors at their ready. So I'd love to see another Bridge of Spies come out where some amazing filmmaker has a great script and decides to, rather than direct it himself, it's like, let's give this to Steve. He can do it. I would love that. I think that feels right. Feels right for to happen in that way.
Yeah, I just like to see more movies like this. It's really smart, grown up, sort of. I mean, there's no explosions or anything in it, even. It's just like,
Nope.
it's actually the plane getting shot down is kind of the shittiest part.
Yes. Yeah, it's and it's it I mean, it still looks better than most things that we see today.
Oh, yeah, looks great.
It looks fantastic, but it's not someone arguing over who is at fault in a car crash in a hotel bar. On leather lounge chairs is vastly more riveting. Or walking along with two umbrellas on a rainy night is so much more riveting in the context of this movie than anything else, you know. Or Tom
Well, and
Hanks or
there's
whatever.
that Spielberg thing too, where it's like so many of these are like one-ers, but it's totally stealthy. It's like the stealth Spielberg one-er, because you're at the end of the scene. I was like, oh, I don't think he cut, did he? He
No,
just
no.
reframed it so many times that it felt like coverage. But
Yeah.
you know, it's just this, you know, casual excellence that he just kind of shrugs off. I mean, the way he blocks things, it's ridiculous. No one's ever been able to do that. No, even the movies his I don't like, I look at him like, how the fuck did you do that?
How did he do that? And also, his team that work with him, he's so spontaneous. So that's the other thing that freaks me out is how
Yeah,
do
the
you.
Munich wasn't storyboarded. He just
Yeah,
came,
he's
like,
like, I
that
didn't
was all
storyboard
like.
it. I'm like, wait, you came up with those guys after, like, Munich was a movie that like hit me like a lightning bolt. Because you have, I think you want to say you've got formative films that, you know, teach you your love of cinema, and you absolutely do. But like, I think genuinely the profound power of a director's eye, like, was even, I remember just like hit me like I was having electroshock therapy in that movie. Like watching Bodies in Space, like him come up to Daniel Craig's eyes in the rearview mirror after like coming from the street and working to that position, and then in the background you can still see three characters and also Daniel Craig's killer 1970s sunglasses in the rearview of a car. And I'm like, and he's like, oh no, I don't storyboard. And then the next scene, like after they do that first hit, like all, like five bodies in a space at a cafe, at an outdoor cafe in, you know, Eastern Europe or wherever they are in France. So, you know, right in the center of Europe, but then if it's in France, but there's that moment, and I'm just like, he is composing the living shit out of this movie. And if he just came up with that, other guys would be sketching it on the way to hope that they got even close to that. And it would feel very
Well, 6 months in
painterly.
advance, they'd be pre-vising
Yeah,
it.
it's just like he can just do it. And that team that's around him, his production team who work with him so much, they're just like, they just are up for his spontaneity. He wants to be in the space to be inspired. That's so crazy. That confidence
That's like
is
the
nuts.
wittiest transition in that too, when they go to France and like the first shot of France is Matthew Almeric with like the in front of the Eiffel Tower with the cigarette and the baguette. It's like, oh, I think we're in France now.
You don't need a big chevron, this gigantic thing that's like Paris. He's just standing there. It's Matthew Almeric's face is Paris. That's all we need to know. It's Brilliant. God damn. But yeah, now he in Bridge of Spies, it's to think that he didn't storyboard the entire opening with Rylance and how spellbinding that is actually unfair to most other filmmakers. Like, how did you do that? He's like, that's his brain, guys. That's how his brain works.
And you can see him like playing the game. It's like the beginning of Rio Bravo too, where
Yes.
like they're gonna play a game like how long before someone talks, right?
Yes,
Like movies always do this with the opening where it's kind of awkward and it becomes like you notice it, like that person would have said something there, but
yeah. It's just nice. It's
yeah.
so great. Well, look, man, thank you so much for talking to me about this. I love this movie. I'm so glad. There's a couple of other movies in the Decade Project that have already been lined up for 2025, talking about movies of 2015. Some of them I'm already like dreading. One of my friends and producer on One Heat Minute, Brian Game, is like, let's do Jurassic World. And I said, do you hate me? But Bridge of Spies was
Not as
such
much
an
as Jurassic World hates itself. That is such an unpleasant experience. Like
the
just
one of them. And speaking of like someone not getting just not getting it, not getting what Spielberg is, but yeah, it feels very whack, and but this movie is just spellbinding. So if you haven't had a chance and you still deeply highly rate this movie, go back and check it out again. It was brilliant. Sean, thank you so much for doing this.
Hey,
Thank you for
thanks for having me, brother.
your digressions and stories as always. It's always a treat. It's always a treat. Let's pray for another Spielberg movie where the Coen brothers decide they want to write. They've got a cheeky script lying around in the in their archives that they want Spielberg to shoot one last
This
time.
point, I'd settle for another Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah. Them together, the power of them together. It's nothing, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it in the world. One last story, because I know that you will love it, is there's another Coen brothers that aren't the Coen brothers, and the fact that Bill Murray was in a Garfield movie because he thought the Coen brothers wrote it is also one of the funniest things in the whole world
I
to
think he was making that up,
me.
right? He was, that sounded like him.
He had to have been, but also I just love that maybe there is a lick of truth in it's like Coen brothers. Okay, he even had the meeting, or even allowed someone to call him on his weird payphone situation in his house, and they're like, yeah, oh, okay, Coen
I
brothers.
think he knew that they wouldn't be doing Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Yeah, the Tale of Two Kitties, true, but maybe the first Garfield. I don't know. I love that. But this has been great, man. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.